Hey, everybody. I wanted to let you know about a book that's out right now that's called The Witch's Encyclopedia of Magical Plants by Sandra Kynes. It is your ultimate acacia to zinnia guide to over 550 magical plants for rituals, spellcraft, divination, and more. It is an incredible resource for magical practitioners. It's an illustrated encyclopedia that offers detailed profiles of all the herbs, houseplants, fruits, vegetables, trees, and flowers that you could ever need. It is a comprehensive reference guide. It's packed with familiar favorites like apple, lemongrass, with lesser known options like moonwort and pignut. There are hundreds of plants to choose from. You are going to find the best botanical partners for raising your healing energy, communing with your ancestors, increasing your psychic ability, manifesting your dreams, and anything else you could possibly want to do with plants. You can grab your gardening gloves and save 20% on The Witch's Encyclopedia of Magical Plants by Sandra Kynes by going to Llewellyn.com and using coupon code PLANTS20. That is, go to Llewellyn.com, enter coupon code PLANTS20, and you will get 20% off The Witch's Encyclopedia of Magical Plants. That coupon code is valid through March 31st. It's not good in conjunction with other discounts or previously placed orders. You will need to be logged into your Llewellyn.com account for the coupon code to apply. Check it out. It is a great resource for all of our plant lovers, and you will not be sad that you've added this to your collection.
Guess what, witches? Tickets are now on sale for That Witch Life's third annual MiniCon, a one-day virtual conference on Saturday, April 6th. This year, we are focusing the entire MiniCon on the magic of astrology. Come join us for workshops about using astrology to improve your magical life. Courtney, Kanani, and I will be presenting workshops, plus there will be a special class by astrologer Michael A. Bryan and a masterclass with renowned astrologer and author Ivo Dominguez Jr. Topics include empowering your witchcraft with astrology, mastering traditional astrology, astrology for artists, moon magic, and healing with the star goddess. If you can't make it live, everything will be recorded and sent to ticket holders after the event. Get your tickets for April 6th, That Witch Life MiniCon, The Magic of Astrology now at thatwitchlife.com. Price goes up March 23rd, so don't wait. Hope to see you there.
I was able to see, hear, and communicate with spirits.
A very personal relationship between a person and spirit.
Carnal lust and fun things like that.
Working with different energies and spirits and communicating.
Creating magic.
Powerful ritual and powerful spell.
She's actually sticking me in the cauldron.
The role of the witch is to make change.
Bless it be, y'all.
Bless it be.
People ask me, like, okay, I'm a witch and I don't know what to do.
20 years ago, three young friends realized they were witches. They scattered to different parts of the world, following magic and spirit. Now, they're back in their hometown to share what they've learned.
Welcome to That Witch Life Podcast, your home for living as a witch in today's world.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to That Witch Life Podcast. I'm Hillary, I'm your host today, and I'm joined by my crazy co-hosts.
I'm Courtney. I am a crazy co-host.
You are a crazy
co-host. And I'm Kanani.
Who is definitely a crazy co-host. Obviously. Stark raving mad, all of us.
One question I have is, like, when I'm not here, do you guys have dumpster fire intros, or
No, it's just mostly you.
Okay.
It's mostly you.
I'm the problem, you. It's me. Hashtag Taylor Swift.
You're the problem. It's you.
It's me. Okay. Because I'm sitting here just like, I don't know if they've ever had a dumpster fire intro when it's just the two of them. But then again, I'm always here.
It is you, obviously.
Just me.
This is, I'm really excited for this episode because we interviewed Michael A. Bryan, and Michael is awesome. And Michael's also going to be teaching at our MiniCon coming up, which is, I mean, I'm so excited for this class. I'm excited for everyone to hear the interview.
You know what's crazy? My name, if I had been born with a penis, would have been Michael Bryan.
Really?
That was the name. Yeah, that was the name my parents were considering. It was Michael Bryan Weber. I think also Paul Smith Weber was in the mix as well, but Michael Bryan was so when I first came across the actual Michael Bryan, I was like, that's crazy, because that was almost my name.
That's really funny.
My dad actually wouldn't even discuss a girl's name because he was just so convinced I was going to be a boy. And,
oh my God, why are men?
And you know, it was the early 80s, so they weren't doing a lot of biosex testing or, you know, reveal.
Did your parents find out?
No,
like, they didn't during the pregnancy?
Nope.
Yeah, my parents didn't either, which I think is bananas.
I think a lot of people was kind of unusual. My mom said that back in the early 80s, late 70s, they would only really do the ultrasounds if there was concerns that there was something wrong. And now it's like, having gone through a pregnancy where you get like ultrasounds, like seems like every 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think my parents knew.
They did know.
Because I think they told, I'm pretty sure they told my grandparents by like, it was, I don't know if it was someone's birthday. Or, I can't remember when it was, but there was like, they were giving them a card for something, and in it said that, you know, they were pregnant, and it said it was a girl.
They didn't hire a plane to shower the crowd with pink dust and then crash and burn and kill the pilot?
No, they almost did, but they decided that might be like not quite enough of a spectacle.
Oh my God. So the woman who is credited with starting the quote unquote gender reveal, because gender is not related to biological sex, let's just say that. But she started this when she simply went to a cake baker and said, give me either pink or blue filling, depending on what this piece of paper says. So it was like super simple. And people thought, oh, well, how cute is that? You know, when they cut into the cake.
It turned into causing parties,
like set the entire West Coast on fire because you're blowing things up. And even she has come out and said, y'all, you have to stop. This is stupid. This is madness. She's like, I just thought it would be fun for my family and friends to cut into a cake and us all go, yay. But,
oh my God.
I still have in my daughter's baby book, because I knew she was going to be a girl, and I said she was going to be a girl from the moment I knew I was pregnant. And they gave me an early ultrasound, and they were like, hey, do you want to know the sex? And I was like, sure. You know, they're like, we think we could tell you early. So it was 15 weeks instead of 20 weeks. And they did it, it was a vaginal ultrasound as opposed to on your belly. And so because of the angle, they were like, oh, it's a boy. And I didn't get upset. I was just kind of shocked.
You were confused. And then they were wrong.
I was like, okay, sure. I went home and told everybody it's a boy, you know, and so I have that sonogram in her baby book because it says Gavin on it. And so when she looks at it, it's got the date, right? It's clearly her, but it says Gavin because that was my boy name. So if it was going to be a boy, it was going to be Gavin. So her very first sonograms in her baby book have
that
her brother's name.
That is so funny.
Because they had told me. So apparently what was not a penis was a finger. And because there was something there, clearly, but apparently, you know, she thought she was funny.
She was flipping me off between her legs.
Like what are you doing?
After you told me that you actually were having a girl and not a boy, I just sent you text message saying, ha, 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 ha. But finally you're like, can you just not do that ever again? And I went, ha, 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 I just kept going.
It was hilarious because the whole time I realized I only bought gender neutral clothing because something in me was like, I'm just not I'm not having a boy. It's just not like, it's fine, but it just didn't feel right. And then I remember we went in for the 20 week ultrasound, and this time her dad was there. And that's how like classy I am. At the 15 week, he wasn't there because it was only the 15 week. And they're like, do you want to know? And I'm like, sure, I'll just tell him later. He'll be fine. So we're at the 20 week appointment where you're supposed to find out. And it's
I believe that every second of that.
Oh, 1,000%. And so, so they're doing it. And as they're doing it, they're like, do you want to know if it's a boy or girl? And he's like, oh, we already know it's a boy. So she's proceeding. And then it's getting towards the end and she goes, I haven't found any boy parts yet. Do you want me to confirm this? And he's just like, yes, yes, please confirm. Yes, please confirm. And she's doing it and she's showing us, she's like, this is a girl. This is 1,000% a girl. And I just started laughing hysterically.
You're like, I fucking knew it.
He's like, call your mom. Tell her to stop buying things. She'd already started buying things that said Gavin.
I know. It was hilarious. Second one.
It was so funny. And the doctor, when he came in and saw it, he's like, you haven't painted the nursery yet, had you? And I started laughing. And I was like, nope. I was pretty sure this was a girl. He's like, well, you were right. And so then when we told everybody, my mom was like, but I have all this stuff that says Gavin. And I'm like, he's next. It's fine. Save the stuff.
Just save it. He's coming. And of course, there he is.
My psychic stories around my, you know, about Nugget are kind of morbid. But my first pregnancy loss was I felt like it was a boy almost immediately. And I was like, okay, I think we're having a boy. Da, 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 da. And then the night before I lost that one very, very early on. The night before we were going to go in and see if we could, hear a heartbeat. It was like, I guess we were 6 weeks in. I had a dream that a young man walked up to me, handed me a stack of papers and said, sorry, mom, I'm a girl. And like, almost like he handed in his notice or something. And then he turned and walked away. And I was like, oh, well, maybe I'm just wrong about this, you know, this by like either the gender or biology. And I think Nugget just checked out the chromosomes and went, no, not this one. And then apparently she said no to the next one too.
she took her time.
Nothing wrong with being picky. Well, as soon as we did IVF and they were all like, oh, do you want to know the sex of the embryo? And I'm like, nope, I don't want to know. Then of course, as soon as we had a heartbeat, I'm like, I want to know immediately.
Like, no, I need to know. Tell me now.
I'm like, okay, we have a heartbeat. Things are progressing. Yes. Now I need to know.
Now I need to know immediately.
Yeah. And so then it was a nugget. It was a nugget. They're like, it's a nugget. Yeah. And they, I got this, a message from the clinic because my history, they did a whole bunch of genetic testing, stuff like that off my blood. And then, I knew that when I opened the results, it would say what the bio sex was. And I did wait for Brian to come home, but it was freaking killing me. I was like, oh my God, I can't, I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't. And then, yeah. So that was a total tangent had nothing to do with, well, I guess it kind of had to do with witchcraft because we said we knew the biotech of our children before they arrived.
I mean, this is a typical intro.
I know.
Obviously.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with anything that we're going to discuss.
Like most of the times during the intros, I'm like, we go off on a tangent and I'm like, I truly do not remember how we started this. Like, I don't remember how we got here, but they're fun anyway.
So.
Well, are y'all getting excited for MiniCon? I am so pumped.
I feel like we've done this. This will be our third MiniCon. And we do these twice a year. It always feels like we're getting together with our really old friends that we see twice a year because we have, a lot of times we have new people, but we have mostly many of the same people who show up. And it's just so fun to be in the virtual space with everybody.
Exactly.
I have no idea what I'm going to wear, but I have a special coffee mug. That is my level of priority. I know the coffee mug that I will be drinking from that day. I bought it special at the store and I saw it and I'm like, this is my MiniCon coffee mug.
I mean, that makes sense because you're going to be seated. So like you could be in pajama bottoms.
Oh, or no bottoms at all. Well, last time
I was
we did
say,
we,
let's just hope I wear bottoms. That's let's all hope
we did some MuppetCon. We did some MuppetCon, and Kanani was at my house for one of the days, and it was really, really fun. But at one point, we played a trick on everybody, and that we switched devices. So I was coming in from Kanani's computer, and she was coming in from mine, and we pretended to be each other. And then when it was like actually
Wait,
time
when
to do
was chat, this?
So why did we do that? We did do that.
We did. I don't remember that.
I don't even think I'd been drinking.
Not yet. No, you hadn't.
Was that one of the cons where I had to leave a little early because of STLC?
Yes. So Kanani and I switched places, and I pretended to be her, and she pretended to be me. And but then as soon as it was time for tech, I like dropped character and went running, and people saw me push her out of the seat. So I was like, she's going to break the con. And so everybody saw the stripy kissy face pajama bottoms that I was wearing because I was running through from the neck up. I was all professional witch. And then from the neck down, it was little kid-esque pajamas.
I mean, yeah. You know,
that's how it works.
I feel like that's a lot of days. I mean, like literally I took a meeting the other day and I just was like super tired, and it was really cold. It was like a week or two ago where it got really cold in the evening, and I had like a afternoon meeting. It was freezing in my house. I was 100% in like fleece pajama bottoms. Like I was in a nice top. No one knew, but I was toasty, and that was the most important thing, obviously.
Obvio.
It was so cold. I was like, no, I need to be warm right now. But yeah, I think the mini con is going to be really fun. There's some great classes. I'm excited to see both of your classes.
Mine is going to be a lot more hands-on than practicum because I have a really beautiful exercise that I've led for many years, which is about doing some healing work through connecting with the star goddess. So it's in the same vein as astrology. It's slightly different beat, slightly different offering. And I think people are going to have a lot of folks that have gone through, that I've led through this process have really, really had some powerful experiences. So I'm hoping that's the same for folks that come to this here. I know of one person that whenever they've tried to talk to me about that experience, they like get choked up and they cry. Every single time that they talk about the experience with this. So I'm hoping that will be a good thing for others as well.
That's great. I think that's going to be really wonderful, Courtney.
And I love that in the interview, Michael really goes into how his workshop is going to be. And I think people are going to be super stoked about that as well.
Oh,
yeah, I feel like his workshops are a little bit different than is what's typical in like a really good way. It's more interactive. I think people are really going to take a lot away from these workshops. And I love that it has the theme of astrology because, yeah. I mean, so much of what we do and what we love and what we like really does kind of have a lot to do with the astrology part of magic.
Yeah.
Hey, Kanani, what's the name of your class? You don't even remember the name of your class, do you?
I don't even remember the name of my class. Do I have time to look it up?
Yeah, go look it up. Tell us about your class. Oh my God, I can't. You don't even remember the name of your class.
That is so
funny. Why?
I'm excited when I remember the names of my children. I mean, I don't know why anyone is surprised. I mean, if I get their names right, that's a great day.
Your class is called The Moon Made Me Do It.
The Moon Made Me Do It.
That sounds right. That tracks.
What's your class about? The Moon Made Me Do It.
It's about, I think a lot of witches, especially early on, you start to work with the moon as far as, the new moon and the full moon. And so a lot of people are kind of familiar with moon magic when it comes to that kind of stuff, but that's only, those only happen once every 28 days. So, every 14 days, it's either the new moon or the full moon. But in the meantime, the moon is still in different signs. So it's about working with the moon kind of in specifically whatever sign it's in and how that can help you, whether it's in a waning cycle or a waxing cycle. We'll do a little bit about, what your own moon sign means, finding your own moon sign. But a lot of it is just about working with the moon in its different signs, because it's constantly, you know, it's constantly evolving through the month. And so there's just so much more moon magic you can do outside of just new moon and full moon rituals.
I think that's going to be a really great class, you know, because I don't think people realize that, right? I think people think of just like, oh, it's a new moon, it's a full moon. But I think getting to understand other ways to interact with the moon is going to be really cool.
And I don't know if you put the swear word in my class description, but the end line for my class that I'd sent to Courtney was, "You're already the moon's bitch, so you might as well." Oh, no. You know,
I left it in. Yeah, learn I left how to work in. With Absolutely it. Did. Yeah.
That's exciting. And then my class is called The Artist Astrology, and it's really just utilizing astrology in your creative practice, like what to pay attention to when you're working on new in different stages of your creative process. You know, sometimes we need to think about when we're signing contracts or when we're really digging into starting something, when we're investing in things, when we're, you know, when we want to promote things. Paying attention to astrology is an important tool. It doesn't mean that if the only day you can sign your contract is not the best day, that doesn't mean, oh, you're doomed, but it's a tool to know, like, what kind of magic you can do to boost whatever you need to get through whatever process you are. So even when astrology, quote unquote, is working against you, that knowledge is helpful in the steps you take, what to watch out for, just what to be aware of in general. And so it's something that I think is valuable. And then, you know, I think it's helpful in, you know, helping propel, especially if you're trying to, especially when you're at the stage when you're really trying to gain visibility, paying attention to those things is really important, you know?
Yeah.
Paying attention to when and why. And also, like, a lot of the performances that I'm involved in, sometimes astrology has a lot to do with the ritual that we're doing for the performance as well. So a little bit about that is how you can use that as a creative inspiration as well.
That's going to be great.
And I think it's going to be fun.
We're offering such a beautiful, diverse collection of classes.
It's really diverse.
Yeah. I mean, Evo's class, Evo's work and Michael's work are both so, there's a lot of formula and prescription that is really helpful to have an understanding of if you want to use it in your witchcraft. And then I feel like then the three of us are kind of like, and here's a more creative approach to it as well, because you got to have both aspects, right?
Right.
So I love that this has been such a, we've had a lot of people request over the years, like, could you do a con that's focused around one theme? You know, because we've had, you know, themes in the past, like, you know, cons in the past where there was a collection of different topics and it was great. But this was one that is really, you know, I feel really good about offering this one deep diving day in helping people get better with their witchcraft with astrology. So you can get your tickets at thatwitchlife.com. And the price is going up next week. So, get the early bird price.
You gotta run for it. And I mean, it's going to be fun. And also, like, one of my favorite parts of these cons is just like getting to connect with everyone. Like, you know, I mean, every time it's like, I feel like I make new friends in the chat, you know, like, I love the community it builds. So that piece of it is also really nice. Just to be connected to members of the community is one of the things I love the most.
So we probably
that's one of my favorite parts.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so if you're wanting to join, it's April 6th.
Saturday, April 6th, 9 a.m. Pacific time. And it's a full day event, but here's the thing. If you can't make it, everything is getting recorded and it will be emailed to all ticket holders, regardless of whether they're there and present or not. I mean, obviously it's really, really fun to be there present, and it is a webinar format, so you don't have to wear pants. And
We had someone do the whole thing in the bathtub, remember?
Yeah, we did have somebody do it in the bathtub from Sweden. I think she was in Sweden
she was on until like all in the middle of the night, her time.
Yeah, I think she took a nap at 2 a.m. and then she came back and joined the con again. So, yeah. So don't worry about it if you're like, oh, I have to step out in the middle of it, or will I be disruptive? No, nobody. It's totally great.
You're not going to be disruptive at all.
No, it's fun to be there live, but you can't be there live. You'll get
right. I mean, if you're in a different time zone, if you have stuff, we also sometimes have people that join for as much as they can and then pop off when they need to. If they have kids or you know, they have work or, you know, time to go to bed or whatever. So like, you know, we love to be interactive with people, but it's also nice. I also find it's nice too, because I'm not like, there are two modes for me in attending things. Either I'm taking notes or I am paying attention to what's going on, because it's like, I can't absorb when I'm taking notes, because I'm not a great note taker, thanks to my ADHD brain. It's like, so I'm just like either frantically trying to take notes or I'm engaged in the thing. But if I'm engaged in the thing, I, you know, there's a good chance I won't remember it. So I really like being able to go back and listen to it, so I can be both engaged in the process and then go back and write down things that I think were important takeaways. So yeah, very exciting.
And I have a couple of other announcements of things coming up that people might be interested in. So on Saturday, March 30th, I am hosting a virtual conversation with Laura O'Brien about the Morgan, the goddess the Morgan, myths and misconceptions. There are a lot of people who are very confused by the information that's out there about the Morgan. And so Laura and I are going to have a really deep but also fun and spirited conversation about, you know, understanding the Morgan based on the reflection in the actual texts themselves, but also talking about like how people can embrace the Morgan as part of their magical practice. And you don't need to be afraid of her. You don't need to be, but you know, there's a difference between being fearful and being, you know, respectful and reverent. So we're going to be talking about all that kind of stuff. And it will give people a chance to get more information about the immersion that I'm hosting this fall, also with Laura and their partner, John, and our friend, Carla Gaskins Nathan. So I've been mentioning this a lot on social media. I'm hosting an in-person retreat. It is called Meeting at the Ford, a Morgan Immersion in the Pacific Northwest in November, from November 14th through 17th. So it is 4 days and three nights of digging really deep with the Morgan, reconnecting with spiritual practice, deepening spiritual and magical practice, and taking cues from the Irish myths to develop the spiritual tools that you need to really improve your life and take control of your destiny. So,
Oh my gosh, it's so exciting.
It's going to be so great. So that's an application only thing, and it's applications open in April. So, but don't worry guys, I will be blasting it all over the place. But in the meantime, just pencil all this stuff in. We've got, you know, the talk with the more about the Morgan on the 30th. We have the mini con on the 6th. And then in November, hopefully I'll be seeing a few folks in person.
And also if you are in the Portland area, on March 31st, I'm going to be performing at, the Alberta Rose Theater, a benefit for the Steep and Thorny Way to Heaven, which is a venue in town that got severely damaged during the ice storm and lost pretty much all of their equipment. So we're doing a big benefit for them on March 31st at the Alberta Rose Theater. So keep an eye on that. If you're in Portland, definitely come check it out. There's going to be a lot of cool performers.
Great way to spend Easter is hanging out with Hillary.
I know, I'm saying, right? And it's the evening. Yeah. So like if you have like Easter brunch plans, you can still run out. There's going to be burlesque people. There's going to be circus performers. It's a great way to celebrate Easter. Yeah, definitely. So it's probably about time to hear from our sponsors, right?
I think so.
Fantastic.
Hey, witches, our beloved kitchen witch, Dawn Hunt of Kachina Aurora is back, and she has all kinds of new delicious magic, and we are here for it.
My husband turns 50 this year, and if I gave him a case of Kachina Aurora's magical marinara as a milestone birthday present, he would not complain, especially now that Kachina Aurora has magical marinara sauces, roasted garlic pomodoro, and sweet basil pomodoro.
Yes, those are so incredible. And with months of cold, rainy weather still ahead of us, I'm all about warm, tasty, super easy meals to make, which is why I absolutely love Kachina Aurora's risottos. Just listen to these flavors. Garlic and Italian herb, hearty mushroom, garden vegetable. They're delicious and super simple to make and perfect for a cozy winter meal.
Not to mention the coffees. She has whole bean moon coffees. The full moon is a light roast. The half moon is a medium roast. And the dark moon is a dark roast. It is all amazing and exactly what you need to start your day.
We have so many coffee witches that are so hooked on these blends. I mean, they're just, not only do they have these wonderful names and qualities, they're legitimately delicious coffees, but literally everything Kachina Aurora makes is incredible. And if you haven't gotten it yet, you have to check out A Kitchen Witch's Guide to Recipes of Love and Romance and Kitchen Witchcraft for Beginners, Spells, Recipes, and Rituals to Bring Your Own Practice into the Kitchen. The recipes are glorious and they're really easy to make, and they are so magical.
Whether you want to try the famous infused olive oil, the scrumptious risotto, or literally anything Dawn creates, go to KachinaAurora.com ASAP and use code WITCHLIFE to get 10% off. That's code WITCHLIFE.
Thank you to Kachina Aurora for being an episode sponsor.
We cannot tell you how many witches have gotten hooked on jasmine pearl tea.
Well, it's friggin' delicious.
And you Jasmine Pearl fans, they have a whole array of absolutely phenomenal winter teas to keep you warm and comforted through these next few cold and miserable months.
Like their Golden Fire Tea, every sip of that tea is an adventure. The turmeric brings warmth and grounding that combines with a zesty kick of ginger and cayenne to create a glow of flavors that dance on your tongue. More than just the taste, Golden Fire heals you from within. It's perfect for those wintry days when you need a bit of warmth, and you can even try it as a latte.
And let's talk wellness. This tea isn't just a delight to the senses, it's a guardian for your well-being, especially during cold and flu season. It feels like a nurturing shield, fortifying and protecting.
A tea that has become a personal favorite of mine, especially during these challenging times, is the Well-Being Blend. It's not just any tea. It's like a comforting friend, offering support when you need it most. Imagine a blend of elderberries, echinacea, red clover, and rose hips. Each sip feels like it's boosting your immune system. Perfect for those days when you feel a bit off or have been around others or under the weather yourself. And the peppermint in this tea, it's incredibly refreshing, especially if you're feeling stuffed up.
Hold on, let me bring you a sip of serenity. A moment of tranquility, will we? Courtesy of Jasmine Pearl's exquisite Tranquility Green Tea, close your eyes and envision lush Chinese tea gardens where each leaf whispers the secrets of centuries-old traditions. This isn't just a tea. It's an invitation to embark on a journey of peace and harmony. Breathe in the essence of this carefully cultivated leaf. A sip can take you on a sensory journey that transports you to a place of calm, where time slows down and every moment is savored. Disclaimer, Tranquility Green Tea experiences may include a heightened sense of inner calm, a peaceful disposition, and a newfound appreciation for the artistry of Chinese green tea.
Supporting small businesses are very important to us, and the Jasmine Pearl is a family-owned tea importer and specialty tea blender, which is based in Portland, Oregon, and they have been crafting tea blends for 17 years and direct sourcing teas from origin since 2004. Their blending and sourcing philosophy is based in the love of fine teas and herbs, which is why they focus on blending with exceptional ingredients, hand blending each batch using mainly organic ingredients, and wow, does it show.
Check out these phenomenal teas at thejasminepearl.com. Save 10% with the new coupon code WITCH2024. That's WITCH2024. Free shipping on orders over $35. Make sure you let them know you heard about them on That Witch Life podcast. And thank you to Jasmine Pearl for being an episode sponsor.
We are so, so, so excited to welcome Michael A. Bryan to the show. Michael is a Bahamian Jamaican astrologer, journalist, author, and clinical hypnotherapist specializing in hypnotic dream work. In May 2023, he published Mastering Traditional Astrology, A Depth of Beginning in the Celestial Art. He is the founder of Oraculus School of Astrology, where he offers a rigorous training program in concrete, evidence-based astrology. He practices Renaissance and Uranian astrology in his client work, focusing largely on predictive and medical astrology research. Within his healing practice, Michael also is a certified Iyengar yoga teacher and Yukidian Reiki teacher, an avid student of Western mystery tradition. He is enmeshed in the world of Jewish mysticism, hermeticism, alchemy, geomancy, and the Kabbalist tarot. to study with Michael, you can find him at oraculousastrology.com, which we'll link in our comments. But we are super excited to welcome Michael here to talk about astrology. And Michael will be joining us for a mini con. So we get to talk to Michael a little bit about our about his class as well. Welcome, Michael. How's your morning going?
Thank you so much, Hillary. My morning is going great. What about you?
Fantastic. Well, so this is a question that we answer or that we ask everyone on the podcast. So we'll get started there. How did you first know you were a witch or a magical person?
Awesome. I first got involved in magic and mysticism and all of these things around the age of 12 years old. And I think it really had a lot to do with the fact that I was reading a lot of Anne Rice, and that really was a safe space for me in my youth. And from Anne Rice, I got into Harry Potter as well. And I think that the work of J.K. Rowling really paved the way for so many of us who have later on gone on to practice, whether it's witchcraft or paganism or mysticism in any way. I think that a lot of J.K. Rowling's work has really laid the foundation for us in our youth to even have this interest in the first place. So that was my main entry point. And from there, I knew I wanted to find a real concrete expression of magic. And I didn't know how to go about that. So I thought that magic was this fantastical thing where you shot fire out of your hands and you bent spoons with your brain. And I didn't really know what else to look for or that it could look some other way. So I started there because back in the early 2000s, there was a lot of online forums for people talking about telekinesis and pyrokinesis. And that was a very big thing at that time. And then from there, I slowly moved into the world of energy work and energy healing because my aunt was a Reiki master and she gave me a Reiki treatment and that just blew things wide open for me. And so I started to realize that there was this other approach to magic and mysticism that wasn't as spectacular on the surface, like shooting fire out of my hands. But I realized that there was this deeper, more spiritual, more internalized version of what magic was. And that's where it started. It started really with Anne Rice to Harry Potter to wanting to bend spoons with my brain to Reiki to tarot and astrology and the runes as systems of divination. And from there, I cultivated a client practice at a very early age. I started giving readings around the age of 13 years old because that wasn't really heard of in the Bahamas. So my aunt had a nail salon and she allowed me to give readings to her patrons. And then my mother would send her friends to me to get readings. And I gave a reading to her boss once. And my godmother, who was already into the world of energy healing, she got readings from me. So I think I just really was fortunate because even though my family didn't really on the surface subscribe to anything that I was doing, they never really stood in the way of me cultivating the sort of magical life I was trying to cultivate for myself.
I love that there's an Anne Rice pipeline.
I know. I was going to say the same thing. And I think, you know, like, I mean, I agree.
The nephew reading, doing readings in the nail salon. There's just so much about the story that's so perfect.
I know. And it's, you know,
I'm not going to lie. I still occasionally blow on a candle and hope it magically lights. Like it doesn't practical magic. It hasn't happened yet. But one of these days, man, it's got to happen. Right.
And I think it's nice because, you know, I think we all have those images. I mean, that's what, you know, magic and witchcraft looked like to me when I was younger, because that's the representations we saw in film, in stories that we read. And so, you know, I think, and especially, you know, in that time period, you know, we started getting into magic around the same time. And it's like, you know, it was hard to find resources. It's like, where do you go? You know, it's like, maybe if you're lucky and you live in a city that has perhaps a new agey shop, you might find like one or two witchcraft books in the back corner, or, you know, if you have a library that maybe has some historical references. But, you know, now it's the opposite problem. We have people that are like, oh my God, where do I choose? There's 8 million resources. That's why we wanted to start this podcast. So mm-hmm. I love that that's the journey you took, because it's true. You know, like that's what I thought. I was like, oh, maybe if I, you know, if I learn magic, you know, I can blow on a candle and it'll light, or I can like, you know, shoot fire out of a wand, you know, that's awesome. And mm-hmm. then you realize, you know, later, like actually it's not as flashy what you can do, but it's much cooler. You know, it's not like, mm-hmm. it's not just doing a magic trick. Like you can actually affect so many different things in your life and others' lives, you know, with your practice. So mm-hmm. I love that. You know, what was it that first piqued your interest in astrology? Like what was the connection there?
You know, the Kabbalistic tarot was really my first touchstone in terms of astrology and in terms of tarot. So I oftentimes tell people that I'm very grateful that in coming into the tarot, I started off with some very heavy hitting Golden Dawn literature. I mean, of course, I also bought The Idiot's Guide to the Tarot, but I also started off with some very intensely esoteric Golden Dawn literature. The Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn was what Aleister Crowley was a part of, and Paul Foster Case, who created, well, he created his own tarot system, but Arthur Edward Waite and Pamela Coleman Smith, this is the fraternity, the secret society that they were a part of. And I was so grateful for that, because their version of the tarot has always been heavily astrological, whereas I think today there's thousands and thousands of tarot decks and tarot authors. And a lot of times it doesn't really have that same traditional astrological base. So because I started my tarot journey with a more traditional, esoterically based approach to tarot, astrology was unavoidable. So that was really my first entry point. And I'm very grateful I had that entry point, because at that age, my mind was still forming in an imaginal, magical sort of way. So in my mind, there really isn't a distinct difference between my tarot practice and my astrology practice, because a lot of the tarot imagery and a lot of the tarot archetypes, as it were, have spilled into becoming astrological symbolism for me. And a lot of my astrological symbolism, I save it within my mind using tarot imagery. So those two things exist just as strongly for me. Oftentimes, there are people who are very, very good at tarot and try to get into astrology, but it never really lands and it never really takes on the same shape. And then we have the same thing in the astrological community, where people think that if they're good at astrology, they'll naturally be good at tarot. And then that never happens that way. So truthfully, you have to develop both with the same level of mastery, basically. And I'm grateful that I had that opportunity to do that. So the two things just exist side by side within my mind.
Thank you for that. I think that that makes a lot of sense, because those things do, it's like they do, there is so much overlap in both practices. But you know, that does, you're right. It, being good at one thing doesn't make you inherently good at the other thing, right? And it's so it's that thing where it's like they're connected, but that still requires you to do a deep dive and a learning into each practice to really make it useful. Or you're just going to scratch the surface otherwise, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's true of a lot of things. You know, I think we go into lots of practices and we think, you know, there are ties to so many things, and you think, oh, yeah. Because of this, I can do this. Or, you know, because I, you know, like, you know, even with different forms of divination, you know, you might, if someone is, you know, does scrying, they might think, oh, I can do tarot. Or if someone does tarot, they might think, oh, I can do, you know, I can do whatever other form mm-hmm. of, you know, divination. So it's like, I think that some of those skills overlap. I mean, there's obvious like mm-hmm. ties together. There's threads that go through there, but they're all so vastly different, you know? Mm-hmm. And the mechanism, though, there's a lot of similarities, like the approach to them is so different, you know? So yeah, I mean, I think that's so true in not just astrology and divination, but with so many different areas of practice.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I have always had this goal of really mastering all the versions of astrology-based systems of divination. So chiromancy is the classical name for palmistry. And there was a time when, even though I know what you just said is true, just being good at one thing doesn't make you good at the other thing, I said, I could do astrology in my sleep. I'm going to be a master, a pro at chiromancy in like 1 week. You know, just give me a teacher to guide me through it, because palmistry is heavily astrologically based, especially the version that I study. I studied with some Indian teachers, and in India, their version of palmistry is exceptionally astrology based. And it's such a different skill, and I suck at it. I absolutely positively suck at palmistry. I just can't. And I'm saying this as a limitation at this moment, but I don't think that I allow myself to go over that initial hurdle. And when I try to go over that initial hurdle, I find myself defaulting into astrology, which makes me know that I'm not actually respecting that palmistry is its own thing that has its own skills and its own laws attached to it. And so I've seen that arrogance within myself as well, in terms of thinking that, oh, I'm so good at astrology. Astrology is the creme de la creme of mystical languages. Therefore, I should be able to do this other thing well. But every time I try to approach palmistry, I get my ass served to me on a platter, because it requires the same amount of dedication and the same amount of respect as anything else I've ever mastered or become good at.
I had a similar experience with runes. Because I do tarot, but one of the reasons that I've noticed with tarot is it's not so much that I am the cards for me. Matt Arn and I have talked about this. The cards for me are almost kind of like just a vessel for the message. Mm-hmm. So I can't just like pick up a different set of cards necessarily and read the cards, because I'm never actually reading the cards. I'm throwing the cards out, and then all of a sudden I'm getting messages. Mm-hmm. And that's where the reading is coming from. And so it's not about the cards, right? Or what's on the mm-hmm. cards. It's just, it somehow is a catalyst for getting me the information to get out. And so I was able to, I'm actually really good at, I can also do like crystal ball readings. Because for whatever reason, looking in, like just gazing at the crystal ball, it triggers that same, here come the messages, here comes the information. So I, you know, thought, oh, I'm going to do runes, right? That'd be fun. I'm going to get some runes. And I throw, you know, put the runes out, and just a hot lot of nothing. I mean, it's just like,
you're like, you know,
looking
what?
At a knife and a fork next to a plate, just like, just nothing, you know? So I understand, you know, you get really good at something, or you have a knack for something, and so you think it's going to, you know, transition to another thing, and then you try that other thing and you're just like, wow, just no. Just no.
No, it's so true. And I think, you know, obviously there's, again, some threads. We obviously have to use our intuition for a lot of these practices, right? We have to be connected. We need to be able to tap into whatever we individually tap into, or get to that place where we're able to, I mean, for me, I have to do a lot of centering before I'm doing something like that. Or like my brain, like my ADHD brain is going to be throwing all sorts of wild shit in there, and I'm going to have no idea whether it's like me just having rando thoughts or there's actually something there. Right. Mm-hmm. So I really have to get into that, centered space. And so, yeah, I think it's easy to believe like, oh, well, if I can do that with this tool, I can do that with this tool, you know? And it's like, I mean, maybe on a very, very, very base level, that's true. But like, you're not going to get anywhere with that tool without understanding how it works. You know, like someone can hand you a hammer, but if you've never used a hammer before and you've only used a screwdriver, you're going to be like, well, how do I do this? Like, you know, you understand that it's going to do something. You have to hold it. You understand it's a tool, but you don't know how it's going to work exactly. So I think that's such a good point. What is, you know, with this, with your astrology practice, both, you know, for yourself and with your clients, what's your approach to astrology? I mean, I know there's so many different ways to approach it.
Yeah, my approach to astrology is, I know that astrology has the ability to describe everything that occurs within our lives, all of the concrete events. So if you get married, if you get divorced, if you have children, if you don't have children, if you live in a foreign country, if you live in the same place you've always lived, if you're going to be wealthy, if you're going to struggle financially, will you have career success? Will you not? Will you marry somebody who is sick physically or somebody who has some other sort of addictive tendency? All of these things show up within astrology to a very large degree. Was your mother an alcoholic? Was she not? All of these things show up. And so that is the type of astrology that I'm interested in practicing. And you're right, there are many types of astrology that exist. There's more psychological versions of astrology where you sit down for an entire hour and you just talk about your personality. And there are people who do that and they do that very well. And at the same time, that's never been my approach to astrology. I can't personally fathom sitting down for an entire hour long session and just talking to someone about their personality, because the reality is that your personality is built based on all of the experiences that you go through in life and all of the concrete experiences that you go through in life. So within the context of my astrology, I do create space in the beginning to speak about that person's personality for 3 to 5 minutes, because I need to know who that person is and I need to be able to tell them from their chart who they are. Because I think that's also part of the magic of astrology as well. If our premise of astrology is true, then we should be able to pick up a chart of someone without having any background information about them at all and essentially narrate their life story to them. And so a lot of people who come to me for readings, that's really what they come to me for. A lot of my clients tend to be astrologers or witches or people who are already in the mystical community. And for them, they don't necessarily come to be in dialogue with me as much as they come to see the magic of astrology in action. So oftentimes my clients sit down and they don't say anything for the entire reading, and then they give me feedback at the end because they want to have that experience of being in magical space and having this opportunity to hear themselves spoken by a complete stranger from the perspective of their birth chart. And then the other portion of my client base are the people who have no astrological background and no magical background whatsoever. They're coming from their corporate jobs. They know that astrology should be able to do something, so they reach out to me. And in those readings, it's more of a dialogue back and forth. And I appreciate both of them, but at the same time, I know that the readings that actually make an astrologer great at what they do is the reading where the astrologer is forced to look at that chart without having any background information about the person and tell that person the concrete experiences that have happened in their lives. Did they meet their lover in college? Did they meet their lover abroad? Did they fall on their forehead when they were 4 years old and end up with a scar on their forehead? Those are the things that astrologers have always been able to do throughout time. And it's gotten lost in the last 100 years of astrology, because in the last 100 years, astrology was built in the shape of psychology, because psychology was also just established 100 years ago. So because the world became so obsessed with this idea of me, myself and I, tell me about me, my psychology, my personality testing and all of that, the astrology that has come up within the last 100 years has also taken that same shape of only talking about the personality. So what I do is I'm actively trying to reclaim this more traditional approach to astrology, where people went to an astrologer to find out if they were going to have 2 children or 1 child, and they go to find out whether or not they'll even have children at all. I'm more concerned with the practical things that cause a person to live their life joyfully, as opposed to just talking about their personality, basically.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think there is, I mean, I agree, so much of the focus that you see out like in the general world is like, oh, well, that's because you have this personality type because you're a Virgo. You are like this because of a thing. And like, I mean, obviously there's some inherent truth to that. I mean, obviously that's a portion of it. Mm-hmm. But I like what you said as well, which is like your personality is not just that, it's also your life experiences. Like, you know, you can have some of these inherent characteristics, but like what you experience in life entirely changes that, you know, like if you've experienced trauma, if you've experienced, you know, if you've experienced like, you know, like something that's like a revelation, if you've had, you know, if you, I mean, all these different things, all of these experiences we have, good, bad, you know, beautiful, ugly, like that really makes up who we are and how we react to things.
And that adds on top of, I'm assuming, a layer, or like what I've always believed, a layer that there is some inherent characteristics there. True. But like, and I know, I remember the first time I got a reading by like an astrological reading by someone that approached it more similar to the way you do. And I was like, wait, what? Like, it wasn't just like, well, so, you know, you're going to be stubborn. I'm a Taurus Virgo. You're going to be stubborn in these ways and like really micromanaging in these ways and da, da, da. Like, okay, yeah, but I already know that about myself. Like, you know, like if you're a self-aware person, you already know what you're like, you know? And when I got a really in-depth reading and I started to learn, like, it's like, oh, you know, if you're going to have this, if you're going to take on this new project, these are the timelines you should be looking at doing that. Don't do it during this, you know, like where you're like actually being able to use that to plan choices to, you know, to like as an aid in the choices that you make. And then also, you know, like being able to see, you know, maybe these significant moments that happened in life as well. And I was like, oh, wait, what? Like,
yeah.
I thought astrology was that thing in like the, you know, in the kind of alternative newspaper that told you like how you were going to feel this week. So, I mean, and I mean, not that there's not relevance there, but yeah, that, you know, I think it's like so interesting. When you get to see how in depth it can go and actually how much of a tool you can use astrology when you have someone that's really, really understands it, that can help guide you through that. It's like really such an amazing thing. And I've been able to make genuinely solid life choices with that in mind, with that as a tool, with that as a form of education in the decision I'm making. So that's really, really cool. How can we individually use astrology to enhance our own magical practices?
This is a great question. I think that today there are a lot of people who are interested in astrological magic, which is a branch. It's not necessarily a branch of astrology per se, but it is an arm of a branch of astrology. So in astrology, there are four main branches. The first one is horary astrology, which is astrological divination. Somebody asks you a question and then you cast a chart for the moment when they ask that question, and you interpret that chart basically in order to find the answer to the question they asked. So that's horary astrology. Then most of us are familiar with natal astrology, which is the astrology of your nativity or your birth chart, where we interpret the birth chart to describe your natal promise or your destiny in this lifetime. And then the next branch of astrology is electional astrology. And electional astrology is what people oftentimes think about when they think about astrological magic, because electional astrology is essentially electing or choosing a time that is going to be most appropriately aligned with whatever you're desiring to do. So, for example, if you want to go to court and you want to be successful in court, maybe you'll go to court on Jupiter's day, which is Thursday, and maybe you'll go to court on the Jupiter hour of Jupiter's day, which is probably going to be sometime around midday on Thursday. And that's when you're going to go to court, because you know that Jupiter is a god of luck, success, and abundance. And therefore, going to court on a Jupiter day at the Jupiter hour is probably going to be most harmoniously aligned with you being successful in your court case. And maybe you'll do some other things and you'll wait for Jupiter's day or Jupiter's hour on Jupiter's day when Jupiter is having a good relationship with your birth chart. Because all of those things, magic in general, has to do with momentum. So the more positive momentum you have moving in one direction, the more likely you're going to have a positive outcome. So there are things like that that can be done. And I think within the witchcraft community in general, there's always been this rudimentary astrological understanding that there are some things that we do when the moon is waxing, there are some things that we do when the moon is waning, and there are things that we don't do at all on a new moon or a full moon. And so there's always been this understanding just on a ground grassroots level within the magical community and the pagan community about how to live with the moon, for example. And I think that having a little bit more understanding, especially in terms of the planetary days, which I also think is something that's generally known within the magical community, which god or which planet is associated with which day, but also understanding the planetary hours, which isn't really that difficult. Basically, you could learn the planetary hours in an hour or something, but also understanding the planetary hours can give the magical community a deeper understanding of just how to plan things in the most auspicious way from an astrological perspective. And it doesn't matter if that's going to court or if that's casting a spell or if that's doing any sort of thing that you want to manifest along a particular trajectory. Understanding a little bit about electional astrology could be a very good thing. And then the last branch of astrology, just for completion, is called mundane astrology, and that's the astrology of world events. And so mundane astrology isn't really that useful from a magical perspective, but definitely electing, knowing when to elect and how to choose auspicious times astrologically, is really the heart of what we call magical astrology today.
Thank you for that breakdown. I think that's so helpful to like understand how I mean that like there's not just one approach, right? And there's not just one way to utilize astrology. I mean, I think sometimes it's also, you know, sometimes you have to go to court on a day that's not a great day, but knowing that is actually good because it means that you can do spell work to help help counteract that, right?
Mm-hmm. It's literally like dressing for the weather. You can't do anything about the weather, but you gotta be out. So you might as well know, is it gonna be, you know, 30 degrees with rain coming in sideways, or is it gonna be 72 degrees with a gentle breeze?
Like, and it's such valuable information, because if you know that this might be a difficult time to get the decision you want out of a legal case, right? It also allows you to prepare for what other people's responses might look like, to do magic that might counteract that, to, you know, so you're not caught off guard. Because usually when things go wrong, it's when you've been caught off guard and you're not prepared for something to go wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in that vein, what are some astrological like do's and don'ts? Like when you're looking at astrology, what are some basic do's and don'ts for people?
Yeah, I think that one of the basic don'ts is that, you know, in magazine culture, we end up thinking that, oh, here are three things to do to improve your sex life if you're a Taurus, or here are the top two things you should do to attract the partner of your dreams if you're a Leo, or something like that. And I think that that is really an erroneous way to think about astrology, because we're all complex human beings, we're all complex magical beings, we're all complex spiritual beings, and we aren't just one thing. And I think today, a lot of the way how astrology tends to get spoken about, especially in public spaces, is as if you are a Gemini, or as if you are an Aries, or as if you are a this, and therefore, here's what the rest of your life is going to look like. And so I think that's probably my number one thing that people should stay away from. And it's kind of difficult to tell people that, because so much of astrological consumption in the year 2024 has to do with, oh, let me go and buy this thing because I have my sun in Virgo, or oh, let me go and do this thing because I have whatever else going on. There's so much of what happens astrologically in terms of how astrology is sold to the general public. And I think the general public has bought so deeply into that because it makes them feel as if they have some deeper insight into themselves, when that really isn't the entirety of who a person is. So I don't really have much astrological do's. I think the one do would be, if you really genuinely want to experience the magic of astrology, then book a reading with someone who is a reputable astrologer and allow that person to be your segue or your introduction into an astrological practice. But from the perspective of don'ts, I mean, truthfully, astrology is it's a very complex language. And on the one hand, I want to say don't do your own astrology if you're not a trained astrologer, because very often as human beings, when we're faced with the opportunity to dive deeply into something, but we see that thing starting to get complex, our automatic default is to make that thing stupid again. So our automatic default is to dumb it down so that it can feel a little bit more digestible. And what I find a lot of people doing when they try to do their own astrology is they open the book and they're like, whoa, what is all of this? And then they quickly revert to talking about, I have my sun in Taurus, I have my, you know, they quickly revert to talking about the safe astrology that they've always known and that's always made them feel like they know something. So I'd say don't do your own astrology. If you really want to have an astrological experience, go to somebody who is a reputable astrologer. Let that person guide you through the landscape of your astrological chart. And if you want to know how to use astrology in your life in a deeper way, then especially in terms of the magical piece I was talking about, in terms of the electional astrology, that is pretty simple. That's pretty straightforward. So take a workshop on electional astrology. There are so many resources for that, especially if you really just want to know how to auspiciously plan things. It's a very low-hanging fruit of astrology to get interested in if you are already in the magical community. And I think that's my advice. Don't do your own astrology. Electional astrology is a good place to start, and just know that we're complex human beings and there really is no three things to do to improve your sex life if you're an Aries, because you're more complex than that.
That's like really not giving us enough credit.
I like what you said too about a lot of times people kind of like it because they feel like it gives them, you know, like insights. But I also find that I think people also tend to kind of use it as like a crutch for bad behavior or like an excuse, right? Like, it's not my fault. I have a temper. I'm an Aries. It doesn't mean you get to be an asshole. Come on now.
I think
people use it as an excuse either to do things they want to do or to continue with bad behavior that they really should be working on and say, oh, well, it's not my fault. You know, this is my sign.
Yes, it's like when I blame impulse spending on being a Taurus.
But you've got so much Taurus. Well, and also it's like
oh, look, a shiny thing. It's because I'm a Taurus.
I should definitely shop at Home Goods today because
I'm a Taurus.
I'm a Cancer, and I need to buy all of the Christmas decorations.
Definitely.
I mean, the thing is, and this I think is also a good reason that going to someone is helpful, because we're so biased in what we do with ourselves. Like, there's no way, even if you're really good at astrology, yes, that helps, right? Or you're really an accomplished tarot reader, sure, that helps. But it's always good to get someone else's perspective, even when you're really accomplished, because the way we interpret things, it's so hard to be truly unbiased because we are a ball of bias about ourselves. Like, you know, even people that, like, I'm someone that tries to really take a step back and try to see things in a like really even keel way and try, but there's no one out there can be like, I'm an unbiased individual. That's bullshit. All of us are biased in many ways towards many different things, including ourselves, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's very easy to, especially when you're less knowledgeable in an area like that, to find confirmation bias in literally anything. You're like, oh, look, see, this is exactly why I did this thing I shouldn't have done. Or, oh, look, see, this is exactly why I should justify doing this thing that I really know I shouldn't do. You know, so it's like having someone, even if you're accomplished, I think to read tarot for you, it doesn't have to be all the time if you're really accomplished, but still to get that outside perspective with tarot, with astrology, with whatever, I think it's really valuable because that bias is so inherent, like with all of us. And it's very easy when we want something to like convince ourselves that our chart says that we should do it, even if we know like on a practical level, hey, I probably shouldn't do that.
But for myself, I have people who I go to for readings, and it's really not that many people because I just don't have that relationship with many people. But I go to people for readings when it comes to astrology specifically. I think when it comes to tarot, I'm not sure why it is, but I feel as if I have been able to grow a more unbiased relationship between myself and tarot than between myself and astrology. And it's strange because I would never do astrology for myself. but I would do tarot for myself because there's something about tarot that just feels like it speaks to a more honest part of myself and the more objective part of myself. Whereas when it comes to astrology, I can, you know, like anything, when it comes to astrology, I can look at it and I can try to twist it and turn it. And I can say, well, if I wait for this thing to move one more degree, you know, like there's that becomes possible with astrology. One person once called it defensive driving astrology, where you can see that you're going to enter a shitstorm ahead of you. But you say, well, if I wait for the moon to be in this degree of this sign, and then if I wait for the Venus to be doing this thing, and then if I wait for the sun to do this thing. But the reality is that it is a shitstorm. It looks awful because it is awful. And astrologers oftentimes get into this defensive driving astrology where we try to, I think in the Bahamas, we call it Jimmy rig or Jerry rig. We try to Jerry rig the machine so that the machine could work in the way that we want it to work. But the machine is the entire universe, you know, and the universe has already told you no, and there's no way to really fix that for it to say yes. So point is, in astrology, I find myself getting into that defensive driving state of things, whereas in tarot, there's just a part of me that just accepts the tarot as being final in terms of what it says. And I know that I can't flip or reverse those cards any other way, because once those cards are laid, that's it. So it's interesting because different oracles or different divination tools for me, I have a different relationship with them.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, actually. You know, I mean, and I feel like probably people find that with particular tools that they can be more practical and less biased. And, you know, like I certainly know there are certain tools that, like, I'm like, I'm not going to use that on myself because I know I'm going to just like find a way to like, agree with something that I know
most
I
of us should
do.
Not. Most of us should not cut our own hair. Okay,
yeah, right.
I mean, exactly. We just probably, my husband can because he just basically buzzes his. But any of us that want to keep any kind of shape to it, we have to go to someone else, even if we're really good with hair.
That is true.
It's true. I mean, it's true because, like, yeah, I mean, there are some things that I think we can get comfortable doing, or it's not that you can't use any of these tools, but it's always, I mean, I think for me, getting an outside perspective is very helpful because, like, especially when it's something that I'm very emotionally, like, sucked into, because it's going to be really hard to weed through, you know, like, my own emotion around that and be more practical. What do you think some common myths are about astrology?
Boy, I think some common myths about astrology, probably the biggest myth, and I think this comes from the non-astrological community, the biggest myth is that astrology doesn't work. You know, and I think that is something that I hear a lot of times from people who haven't studied astrology, they haven't really tried, and they just have one understanding of it, which has to do with your sun sign. Your sun is
right. It's
Gemini.
Like the person. It's like what they see in the back of a paper. Yeah,
exactly. So I think that's really the biggest myth, and I guess from within the astrology community, I think one of the biggest myths is that astrology is easy to learn. That's something that really started happening in the 90s, because in the 90s, we started to have a lot of weekend spiritual workshops where you could, you know, leave your house on Friday as an accountant and then come back home on Monday morning as a level one Reiki practitioner. You know, you could come back as a healer basically in 3 days.
And that's how it works for sure. Yeah.
And within Reiki, that is a magical part of Reiki practice, that you can learn Reiki in the weekend, basically. But I think when it comes to astrology has never been built in that way. And because people were also teaching astrology in the 90s, where there were these spiritual weekend intensives going on, astrologers started to want to find a way to teach astrology in the weekend format as well, which has never been done before in existence. And so we ended up with this very dumbed down version of astrology, which people call the astrological alphabet, in order to make it digestible so that you could leave home on Friday as an accountant and come back home on Sunday evening as an astrologer. And it's still going on today. And I don't understand why, because there are so many tools and so many astrologers and so many astrology podcasts. But fundamentally, like I said earlier, as human beings, we try to make things as simple as possible so that we can feel safe, because there's something unsafe about complexity. And so if I make the astrology, bring it down to my level, then it somehow feels like a safer thing for me to practice, even though I know that it's a complex system. So we still have this 12-letter astrological alphabet going on today, which is really unfortunate. And I think that that's the biggest myth in astrology from within our community, that astrology is easy to learn. I speak multiple languages. I know that a language is very, very, very difficult at the moment. German is absolutely kicking my ass because it's such a complex language. But that is languages. And there's a part of you and there's a part of all of us, I think, that really has to surrender the part of ourselves that feels like we know something, especially when you're learning somebody else's language, because you don't know that language. There's no part of you that is familiar with that language. You do not know that language. You have to give up that part of yourself that feels comfortable knowing things all the time and really step into a state of genuine studentship. And when you step into that, you might realize, well, shit, it's probably going to take me 12 months before I get good enough to have a conversation. But if I stick with it for 12 months, I'll be in a much better place than if I just try to watch a German movie and then try to talk with somebody from watching that movie. And astrology is the same way. It's a language. It's not an easy language to learn, but once you learn it, you begin to speak in it fluently, just as if you were to learn Spanish or German or Russian or any other language.
That's such a helpful answer, actually, because it is like a language. And I think that, and I also think that people get discouraged so easily because they're like, oh, I haven't figured it out in 5 minutes. So I'm not, I guess I just don't know how to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's just not true. I mean, a lot of these tools that we use, like there's not that many things that you can learn in a weekend and like you can maybe learn some foundational stuff in a weekend, but not mm-hmm. learn how to utilize something to its full capacity. Like, so, and I think that, you know, because of that false sense that something can be gained in that short of a time period, it sets people up to feel like they're failing all the time. Like, you know, like, mm-hmm. well, I went to this weekend class, like, why can't I figure out all these things? You know, I mean, mm-hmm. and we shouldn't, you know, get down on ourselves because we didn't figure something out in a weekend. They're all really complex tools that we have to learn, you know?
I just always assumed I'm going to be really good when I decide to learn German because it's such a big part of my heritage and I'm so angry all the time. But I think that there's just a button that's going to click for me. And even if I can't learn the language, if I just yell angry enough and loud enough and it'll fast enough that people can't put the words together, that maybe it'll sound like German just innately, because it's just so much in my DNA.
Yeah, exactly.
I think a button's just going to click and it's just going to come out.
Yeah. From a mountain region.
You're gonna be like, what part of Germany is that from? I don't even were those words?
Do you know where you're at? It's from a small mountain town.
In the Black Forest.
It's a small mountain town. Don't worry about it. Okay, so a really important question, because we are, you know, so excited to have you teaching at the MiniCon. What can people expect from your class, and what should people, you know, what will people be learning?
Awesome. You know, I sat with this for a while because I wanted to do something that felt applicable to the magical community. And really today whenever I give any conference presentations today, it's pretty much all the same thing. And it is, let me show you how I do what I do. Because it's one thing to sit down at an astrology lecture and be like, oh, wow, that was cute. You know, I heard something about astrology, but few people actually get the opportunity to see astrology in action. And so these days, whenever I present at conferences, it's always, let me get somebody from the audience who is a member of the audience and give that person what is known as a blind chart reading, where I essentially read their chart from start to finish without having any feedback from them until the end. And I go through step by step and I say, this is what I'm doing. This is where I start. This is how I proceed. This is where I'm going to go next. and I just go through the whole thing. So that's really what I want to present at the conference. Just come and see the magic of astrology in action. And I know that the community isn't necessarily a community of astrologers per se, but I will simplify it as much as possible to so that you at least have a sense of being able to walk along with me while I read the chart, so that it doesn't really feel like an overwhelming deep dive into a foreign language. It will still be some elements of a foreign language, but I'm going to break it down as much as I can so that people can actually see, oh, wow, this is how he's describing this person's personality. And this is where he's getting this statement about this person's money from. And this is where he's getting the statement about this person's siblings from. I'm going to go through it step by step so that people can feel as if they can follow along.
Okay, that's going to be a lucky person, and there's going to be a brawl in the chat.
There's going
to get up there.
Straight up fight.
I'm already clenched, like, oh my God, when I start saying,
let me just say that this is one of those instances of be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Because when, shaking the head, because you think it sounds great to have someone say all these things, but there might be some not so great things that are shared, and I mean, things maybe that you think other people don't realize or don't know that suddenly you're going to have to have a lot of people find out about. So, I agree. I think people are going to be going crazy over it. It's also a be careful what you wish for situation.
I'll tell you about that, because in my classes where I teach people how to do the same thing, I recently had a student bring one of their family members, because basically how the class is set up is every week students, I ask my assistant Christopher to reach out to a random student, let that person bring somebody from their community to receive a reading, and then I'll give the reading on the spot without knowing who the person is or even who the student is who Christopher reached out to. So we have a very good system that makes it completely an honest process where I don't know anything about the person ahead of time, and it's just a straightforward thing. And this one student brought one of her family members to receive a reading, and at the end of it, I'm you know, everything is in your chart. Every single thing is in your chart. The husband who you broke up with because he was an alcoholic, and he also had no financial sobriety. So all of the financial burdens of the family fell on top of your shoulders. And that's something that always happened to you from you were born, because it felt as if your mother, after having three children, you being the third one, she didn't have any more space to have children, and she breastfed all the other siblings, but she didn't breastfeed you because she said she's no longer a cow. All of these things that occur to us within our lives are in our charts. And so we tend to think in the 21st century that there is no quote unquote bad chart, or there can't be a bad reading, but every trauma, every joy, every pain, every sorrow you've ever had is in your charts. And some people have a lot more trauma and pain and sorrow. And so anyway, the student brought her family member in for a reading, and it's a blind chart reading. It's my way of teaching my students how to do astrology. And I read the chart, and it wasn't a pleasant thing. And afterwards, the lady basically confirmed that I even spoke about her acid reflux. And afterwards, the lady confirmed that everything I said about her life and her marriage and her family and her siblings and everything was true. And everybody in the class, it's a class of 50 students, everybody was heartbroken, because that lady went through an extraordinary amount of difficulties within her life. And so afterwards, I got on the phone with her family member who brought it to the class. And I was like, hey, you brought your sister to class, you know, can you check in with her and make sure she was okay? And the sister on the phone said, I thought it was great. You know, that sounded exactly like her whole life. But I mean, you know, it's one thing for you to think that it's great because it was accurate, but sometimes accuracy isn't always pleasant.
Yeah, that's so true. I think when we're getting readings astrologically, if we're getting tarot readings, if we're getting other forms of divination, you have to be prepared to sometimes hear some hard truths. You know, like if you want, you know, you know, everything to be, you know, happy and roses. Like, you're not going to get, you know, it's like, that's not reality. Like, and, you know, these things that we've gone through are significant and they do impact us. I mean, we know that it impacts who we are. All of these experiences we have, the good, the bad, the scary, the sad, the whatever, it's like all of those things impact who we are. So like, they're all part of us. And so I think sometimes it can be really hard to hear some of those truths, but I actually think it's very powerful because it helps us make, I think, better decisions or more informed decisions in our lives. So for those of you that are listening, the MiniCon is on April 6th. There are still tickets available, so please go and get your tickets. Michael's class is going to be amazing, obviously. We're really excited for the MiniCon. You can go to our website, thatwitchlife.com. You can get tickets there. Obviously, you can, on all of our social media, we're linking all tickets to everything as well. So, Michael, where can people find you?
Everybody can find me on oraculosastrology.com, and I'm going to give you all the websites. You could put it in the description
in the show
of this.
Notes, yeah.
And yeah, you could find me on oraculosastrology.com. I am currently not giving readings at the moment just because I'm trying to wrap up my next book, which is going to be on the divinational art of astrology, Horary Astrology. And I'm trying to have that published by the end of next month. So I'm completely focusing my energies on that. But after the summer, I'll return to giving readings again.
That's so exciting. Well, congratulations.
Fabulous. And you do a lot of really great, I think, I mean, you always got content out on Instagram. It's how we found you. Mm-hmm. And so I would recommend people also be following you there, because that's where I'm like, wow, this guy is really good. We got to get him at the con.
Exactly. So, I mean, don't miss out, y'all. There are still tickets available. Please go check it out. And then, you know, follow, you know, go look up Michael's website. We'll have it in our show notes. You know, keep an eye on Instagram and everything else. Like, you know, his work is really, really impactful and really amazing. And those of you that are going to be at the con are really, really lucky. So thank everyone. Thank you so much for listening in. And Michael, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks to our sponsors, our listeners, and everyone that helps keep us sane and running all the time, which is hard when you're doing a podcast. But thanks, everyone. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all. Bye. Thank you for listening to That Witch Life podcast. Our music is by Dustin Schultz, editing by Corey Drake. If you like what we do, please subscribe, rate, and review us on Apple Podcasts. If you want to support the show, you can buy us a coffee or check out our merch on our Etsy store, or join us on Patreon for bonus content, ad-free episodes, or to join our Witch Squad. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. For show notes, audio transcript, or to ask us a question to answer on a future episode, go to thatwitchlife.com. Until then, keep moting that shit. We will talk to you next week.
So mote it be.